Hello, welcome to my podcast, Stories at Will. Thank you for finding me. My name's William Lewis. In our first story, Billy and Katie search for the secrets of Father's mysterious cupboard. It's called The Real Magic Came Later. Father told us never to open that old grey cupboard under the stairs. So, of course, we did. Not immediately. It started sometime after Mother died. Father was a magician, the great Walmondo, performing tricks and magic shows at small theatres around the country, village halls even. He'd occasionally do them for us, too, at home. We laughed delightedly as he'd pull out bright silk scarves from his sleeves, or make coins and trinkets disappear, only to find them later in a slipper, or a pocket, or one of our ears. We could never work out how he did it, but we were only children then. Mother laughed too. They were happy times, but all that stopped after Mother died. Father changed. He became quiet, stern, and reserved. Billy, my twin, and I were often left to our own devices in the evenings when Father was away, doing a show. One such evening, Billy said to me, "Casey, I know what's in that cupboard, you know, the one under the stairs." "No, you don't," I said. "I do then," he said. "I've looked in it." "No, you haven't," I said. "Father told us never to open it." "I know," he said, "but I have. I could show you, if you're not scared." I thought for a moment. I was never going to admit to being scared. "Go on then," I said, "but I still don't think you have." We crept like mice towards the cupboard. I don't know why we needed to be so quiet with Father being away. It just felt like that. Billy put his hand on the handle and wiggled the lock, but the door stayed shut. "See, told you," I said, "you can't do it." "Can then," he said, and tried again. But the door remained closed. "Let me try," I said. I reached forward, and as I touched the lock, something clicked, and it slowly swung open. The space inside seemed enormous and smelled slightly musty. On a shelf was a lock of dark hair, an ormolu earring, a Japanese flute in the shape of a carp, and a knife with a brown stain on it. "Those are Mother's," I said. "Not the knife, though." "I know," he said, and closed the door. "What are they doing there?" he said. "I don't know," I said. Father was home for a few days before his next show. Billy and I didn't speak of the cupboard, but I knew we would try to open it again. We waited for half an hour after he left, then went to the cupboard. I couldn't open it, but it opened for Billy. This time, on the shelf, the only objects were the knife and an old photo of Mother in a silver frame, holding hands with Billy and me. She looked very young. She was smiling. Next to it was a piece of paper. It looked quite new. I lifted it out. In Mother's handwriting, it said, "It wasn't his fault." "What does that mean?" he said. "I don't know," I said, "but I expect we'll find out." It was a week before we could get back to the cupboard under the stairs. There was another, different piece of paper. It said, "It wasn't his fault. That's all. I love you." "I love you too," I said, and heard a strange echo from back inside the cupboard. "Love you, love you, love you." I'm going to find her," said Billy, and stepped into the cupboard. "Where are you, Mother? Where are you?" "No, Billy, no," I screamed, and tried to drag him back. But he disappeared into the darkness, and the door closed. I waited up for Father to come home. "Where's Billy?" he said. I don't know," I said. He's gone."
"What do you mean, he's gone?"
"I don't know. I think he's gone to find Mother."
"Mother's dead," he said, "a long time ago. It wasn't my fault."
"That's what Mother told us," I said.
"That's what Mother told you? When? Where?"
"In the cupboard," I said, and started to cry.
You've opened the cupboard?
I nodded, couldn't speak. He grabbed me by the hand and pulled me to the cupboard, put his hand on the lock, and it opened. Inside, only darkness and a fading echo. Love you, love you, love you.
The next years were not easy for Father and me. The police took the cupboard away, but didn't find anything in it. It was just an old cupboard. We got it back some time later, put it under the stairs again, and mostly forgot about it. Father forbade any reference to it. From time to time, I did go and touch the lock, but it never opened again. In 1973, our street was to be demolished for a new traffic scheme, so we had to move house. We threw a lot of the old accumulated junk into the council skip, much of it Father's old magic show paraphernalia. With Billy's disappearance, Father's bookings dried up, so the props hadn't been used in years. After some hesitation, I picked up the old grey cupboard and threw that onto the skip too. Well, finally I had to get rid of it and move on, didn't I? It landed heavily, and the door fell open. A small boy, in short trousers and untidy hair, climbed out and, standing, looked straight at me, as if he'd been expecting to see me. "Billy," I said, and began to sob uncontrollably. "Don't cry, Katie," he said. "Everything will be fine." Well, everything wasn't fine, but some things were better. With my brother back, I began to feel whole again, stronger.
We've all looked into a mirror sometime. But what does the mirror think about us? Find out in Mirror Visions. I have seen them all, old and young, healthy, well, ill, ugly. They come to me for reassurance, for proof that they are still alive, that they are still there, that they are who they think they are. What reassurance can I give them? They stand in front of me with their prinking and their preening, squeezing their spots, adjusting their smiles, picking food from their teeth, applying their paints and their potions. I see the fear in their eyes as I reflect back to them their slow, inevitable decline, their journey towards death. I am at once their best and their worst friend, never flattering, "You look good today," never criticizing, "That's another wrinkle." I tell them how it is. They can make of that what they like. We have no relationship, no emotional bond, yet they keep returning to me. They want to know, "Am I older today? Am I younger today? Will people like me more today? Will they avoid me today? Does that bruise show? Is my hair a mess?" As if I cared. I'm not their life prop, their counselor, their magical improver. They look into me and see themselves as only they can. No filters here of envy, love, ambition, condescension, attraction. All they see is themselves, through their own eyes, through their own hopes and fears, their own confidences and delusions. No one is more honest than me, because I give them that. How needy they must be. How much they must crave this dream of self-knowledge. I am the one certain fixture in their homes. I am in the hall, in the bathroom, the bedroom. I am with them in their most intimate moments. I show them themselves when they would not permit anyone else to see them. I am their priest, their counselor, their confessor. I show them how it is. They trust me not to lie to them. No filters, no mealy-mouthed evasions. I tell it like it is. I know they are scared of me. Break me and expect 7 years bad luck. At least that's what they say. But it shows the fear. Of course I can't bring bad luck.
but I can make them bleed. Smash me and get a cut from one of my 1,000 shards of glass. Go on, try it now. Pick up that hammer. See if you can do it. Of course you can't, because then who would show you? Not yourself as others see you, but worse than that, much worse. I will show you the ultimate horror, the one inalienable insight, the one no one else will show you. I will show you you, as you see yourself. Take it or leave it. Think I care? Hope you enjoyed those two stories. I'll be putting new stories on Stories at Will every week or so. Find me again soon at Stories at Will. This is William Lewis, looking forward to reading for you next time.